Suddenly, the freighter formation opened up, and 8 snub fighters, led by 4 Z-95 headhunters, burst up through the opening at full attack speed. Corrin dropped his crosshairs on one of the speeding headhunters and hit his trigger. The quad burst of laser fire pierced the headhunter's shields, then sheared off the wing. The ship whirled off in a flat spin. Evening his shields out, Corrin dove onto the tail of another set of Typhoran fighters. The group consisted of 2 TIE fighters and 2 Uglies, the hybrid ships with TIE ball cockpits married to Y-wing engine nacelles. Corrin kept an eye on the TIE fighters as Ural went after the Uglies. Though the Gann's exoskeleton made him look clumsy on the ground, his handling of the X-Wing was fluid and delicate. Ural triggered a double burst of laser fire, sending 2 scarlet bolts lancing through the lead TIE's ball cockpit. The TIE fighter hurtled through space. Ural sideslipped the second ship, and before he could begin to maneuver, fired 2 laser bursts at him. The engine ripped free, rocketing off toward Chorax's sun, while the ball flew out of control. Corrin keyed his comm unit. We have 1 bad guy extravehicular. Good flying, Ural.
10 copies.
Corrin pulled back on the stick. Any other pilot in the unit would have been ecstatic, but not Ural. The only way to judge his emotions was to listen to how he referred to himself. Gans felt it the height of arrogance to speak of themselves with a personal pronoun, unless the Gand leadership had determined that they had done something so great that every Gand would be aware of who was being referred to. As a result, when Ural was happy, he referred to himself as Ural. When he was chagrined, as Quirg. And when he was really mortified, as Gand, allowing himself to sink even further into anonymity. Corrin brought his ship around and saw 2 of the freighters hanging in space with fires raging internally. Order, sir? Tycho replied,
Wedge has convinced the convoy that once it makes delivery runs for us, it can go free. Form up with Ural and take 2 tankers for your run. They'll slave their navicomps to yours. Once the cargo has been delivered, let them go and get back to base.
A cloud of steam rolled toward Corrin as the inner door of the thermal lock opened. He and Ural stepped through quickly, anxious to escape the frigid conditions in Hallinet's hangar. Corrin pulled off his gloves, blew some warmth into his hands, then smiled at a small, balding man approaching them. You must be Farl Kort. The man extended a hand.
I am. I want to thank you for your mission here. When we put the word out, I had no reason to expect, well, you know, such a generous response so quickly.
Pleased to meet you, sir. Hallinet was a moon orbiting a gas giant. A thick coat of ice covered the planet, but beneath the frozen crust, the hot heart of the world heated water and rock enough to make life sustainable. The colonists had weathered the Empire and Rebellion all but unnoticed, since the planet produced nothing of use except for their ichthyculture, farms of fish favored by gourmets. The inhabitants numbered just over 10,000. Hallinet was merely 1 more curiosity in a galaxy full of them, and would have escaped Corrin's notice, except for an urgent message sent to Coruscant requesting shipments of Bacta. Farl led them from the tunnel to the edge of a huge chasm. 100 meters above them, a double-walled, transparasteel shield capped the chasm, diffusing the light glowing down through the glacier. On both sides of the chasm, lights shone through viewports carved in the stone and silhouetted bridges that crossed the chasm. Corrin turned to Farl and praised the beauty of the place, then said, Tell me more about the disease that's causing you problems.
The symptoms are congestion, coughing, fatigue, body aches, and a ravenous appetite. Bathing in the mineral springs here seems to help, but a Bacta bath will be far more helpful. This virus mutates so quickly that we can't create a vaccine. What do we owe you for this Bacta? The market value for it is something in excess of 1 billion Imperial credits.
Corrin glanced over at Ural, then shook his head. You don't owe us anything. Farl looked puzzled.
But you must have paid a great deal for it.
The Gand leaned forward.
Ural believes Corin would tell you that the Bacta was collected as part of a bad debt. It cost Corin and Ural nothing, therefore is offered freely.
I see, Farrell said.
Corin smiled. You needn't think of it as stolen, since the government that would have demanded payment from you is not legitimate.
But we've always given something in exchange for what we take.
Corin looked at Ural. I've heard that the fish you raise here are considered delicacies on some worlds, and you mentioned that you have mineral springs.
Ural, flying in here, didn't I tell you I'd give 500 credits for a hot bath and a good fish dinner?
The Gand nodded extravagantly.
Indeed, Quirk remembers your using those very words, and Quirk concurred.
Wedge stood up behind his desk as Booster Terek's bulky form filled the doorway to the station manager's office.
I appreciate your coming here so quickly, Booster. I know you wanted to spend some time with Murax before she heads out.
The older man shrugged.
She's helping prep this horn for his part in the mission.
Booster plopped himself down in a chair.
I think she took up with him to annoy me.
Wedge laughed and sat back down.
I'm sure it does seem like that, but I think there's a lot more there. I'll get right to the point, Booster. I wanted to offer you the chance to pilot the Mimban Cloudrider on the run to Typhara. The Mimban Cloudrider was one of the Typharan tankers. Wedge had pulled the crew from it and, with Booster's help, had gotten identification files sliced together that listed Murax, Corin, Elskul, Sixtus, and Ayela Wasiri under various pseudonyms as the crew. Once in orbit at Typhara, they could make planetfall in a shuttle and hook up with the Ashern. Wedge needed someone to command the mission, and thought Booster would be invaluable because of his experience and instincts.
Booster shook his head. No, the Cloud Rider's too small. Too little to do. 5 years in the spice mines on Kessel changed me, Wedge. Pain I could fight against, but boredom? That was the enemy. Now I travel and do deals for friends because it means I'm constantly meeting folks. I'm trying to fill the void that Kessel left in me. And piloting Cloud Rider isn't going to do that.
A smile slowly grew on Booster's face.
I have an idea that might serve both of us.
What do you have in mind?
Let me run this station.
What?
Look, you're occupying this station, which has been a trade staple in this region for a very long time. You've got the Republic thinking it's been destroyed, but ships that come in system to make navigational adjustments can still see it. You're fooling no one. And the fact that you've shut the station down to folks who have been here a lot means you're making them angry. That in turn means that someone is going to sell you out to Isart.
Wedge nodded. We figured that.
Well, you should also figure this. Pretty soon, no one is going to want to trade with Typhara. You're giving away what Voru wants to charge for. His only recourse is to cut off Bacta going to folks who supply you. Once he does that, you're dead.
Booster pressed his hands together.
On the other hand, if we open this station to trade, we start generating capital for this operation, and we have people bringing us information and equipment. We develop suppliers who are in our debt because of the station, which means they won't want to betray you.
And running the station would mean you'd be anything but bored.
There's that, too.
Wedge thought for a moment. Then he stood and stepped away from the station manager's chair.
Booster Terek, this station is all yours. May the Force be with you.
The shuttle ride down to Typhara, where the rogues were planning to work with the rebel Ashern group of Vratiks, left Corin uneasy. A rising storm caused turbulence, and being strapped into a seat in the back made Corin want to scream. He had managed to get in a little practice with his lightsaber in the ship's galley, but he still felt far from confident using it. Before reading the Jedi material Luke Skywalker had given him, Corrin would have put the dread in his belly down to a reaction to the bumpy ride. Now he wondered if he weren't anticipating some disaster through the Force. The view screens on the interior of the shuttle's cabin showed a heavily forested landscape, punctuated by inorganic stone and transparasteel towers. Mirax indicated one particularly blobby building.
I bet she lives there.
Corrin knew it was Erisi Glarit, to whom Mirax referred. It was Erisi, one of Rogue Squadron's own pilots, who had given him up to Isard. Jealous that Corrin preferred Mirax, she had also engineered the destruction of the Bacta convoy at Alderaan in order to kill Mirax. The main building of the Typhoran spaceport was long and low, with growing trees inside it and decorative elements which suggested that the insectoid Vratix had created the place. Across the way, Corrin and Mirax saw Elskul, Sixtus, and Aiella. Their Ashern contact was supposed to meet them here, but no one appeared to be paying them any attention. Corrin and Mirax found seats in a waiting area. Corrin was walking up to the refresher station when its door opened and a stormtrooper came out. Corrin felt a heavy hand on his shoulder.
I know you. Identification card.
Corrin's mind reeled. It had to be impossible for the stormtrooper to actually know him. Then he realized the man might have seen him on the Lusankya. The stormtrooper examined the ID that showed Corrin to be Eamon Izali, a ship's mechanic.
It seems fine, but you look familiar. Come with me so I can check you out.
Fighting panic, Corrin flashed on one of the Jedi stories he'd recently read. He stared intently into the black recesses of the helmet. I don't need to go with you.
You don't need to go with me.
Corrin grinned. Hey, it's working, he thought. I'm influencing his mind. I can go about my business, he said.
You can go about your business?
The stormtrooper grabbed Corrin's jumpsuit front.
Your business is my business, Void Brain.
The stormtrooper's comlink clicked from inside the helmet.
This is 915, bringing one in.
Quickly, Corrin reached for the lightsaber disguised as a hydro spanner at his waist and thumbed it on. The silvery blade swept up through the muzzle of the blaster carbine. The weapon's barrel fell one way and the stormtrooper's left hand another. As Corrin brought the lightsaber around at the stormtrooper's eyes, the blade burned through the helmet, filling the air with a pungent scent of melted armor and burned flesh. The stormtrooper collapsed. Someone in the spaceport screamed, then two more stormtroopers came running. Two others ran in the entrance closest to Sixtus and Elskul. Elskul pulled a blaster from her bag and shot at one of them. He went down, and suddenly the whole building erupted with blaster fire as stormtroopers appeared on the elevated walkways at the ends of the building. Corrin dove into the row of chairs in the waiting area and pitched them over backward. Mirax went with them and hunkered down beside him. She brandished the smoking ruin of the stormtrooper's blaster carbine.
I appreciate the rescue, but did you have to destroy his blaster?
Can't parry the bolts, so I just parry the weapon.
Corrin ducked as crossfire from the far walkway nibbled away at the chairs. He leaned over and kissed Mirax full on the mouth. Stay here. I have an idea. Lightsaber in hand, Corrin ran low and fast toward the refresher station. He hit the door hard and cut inside as blaster bolts shattered tiles and burned into the Duraplast door. He kicked open the door to one of the stalls, hopped up on the commode, and climbed up on the edge of the Durasteel partitions. He stabbed the lightsaber up through the ceiling and made three quick cuts. A triangular section of ceiling crashed down. Corrin worked his way farther along the partition, then boosted himself up into the second floor refresher station. He ripped open the refresher station's door and stepped onto the elevated walkway. One step out, he brought the lightsaber around in a waist-high cut that caught the first stormtrooper in the back. He pitched forward, then rebounded off the guardrail, but Corrin had already moved past him. In a continuation of the move that had taken the first man, Corrin raised the lightsaber and used a backhanded cut to decapitate a second trooper. That blow was a mistake. It popped the man's head off, but it also took Corrin's arm too far back. Sliding toward the next stormtrooper in line, the third of the four he faced, he wasted a second move, bringing the lightsaber back into striking position. He tried a high, two-handed cut, but the imp had already begun to turn toward the attack and ducked it. The stormtrooper lunged at Corrin, catching him with a shoulder in the ribs. Corrin was driven back to the ferrocrete wall. The lightsaber fell from his hand as the imp drove him again into the wall, crushing his chest. As the stormtrooper withdrew, Corrin kicked off the wall and knocked his foe into the guardrail. Launching himself at the man's head, Corrin grabbed and held on as the metal rail shrieked and bent. Both men whirled off the elevated walkway. Corrin hit hard, his back slamming into the body of the first stormtrooper he'd killed. His rear end hit the ferrocrete floor, sending a jolt of pain up his spine. With his lungs burning for lack of air, he found himself looking straight up into the muzzle of the remaining stormtrooper's blaster. Unable to do anything but cough, Corrin closed his eyes and prepared to die. He heard the whine of a blaster being fired, then felt a hammer blow to his chest. It didn't hurt the way a blaster bolt hurt, but he knew he'd been hit. He willed his eyes open and would have laughed if he could have. Standing over him, he saw Bror Jace, a Typhoran native and member of Rogue Squadron the imps had killed well before Coruscant had fallen. As his consciousness faded, Corrin knew there was only one explanation for what he saw. "I am dying," he realized, "because only the dead can see the dead." Corrin had no way of knowing how long he'd been in the Bacta tank. The pain in his back and guts had been overwhelming at first, but it subsided after a while. Harder to heal was his recognition of his arrogance. "I am not a Jedi," he thought. Trying to use Jedi methods without proper training was stupid. A gentle tug on his breathing mask caused Corrin to look up at the medtech standing over him. Corrin made his way to the surface of the tank, removed the breathing mask, and hauled himself out through the hatch. "How do you feel?" the tech asked as he showered him down. Corrin shrugged and wiped his face. "Pretty good. I was in for, what, a week?" "2 days. You are used to dealing with export quality Bacta. This was made by Zaltin Verachin, and it's more potent." He handed Corrin a towel. "If you will follow me, your friends are waiting for you." Mirax enfolded him in a hug as soon as she saw him.
"I was afraid you wouldn't make it," she said. "I managed to recover your lightsaber for you."
Corrin was greeting Ayla, Elskol, and Sixtus when the man who had saved his life came through the archway. Corrin's jaw dropped open.
"You are Bror Jace."
"Indeed I am."
Jace graciously waved Corrin toward one of the daybeds.
"You'd like an explanation of why I'm not dead?"
Corrin sniffed. "I've been reported dead myself. These things happen." Mirax slapped him playfully on the belly.
"You're dying to know what happened to him, just like the rest of us."
Bror began to pace.
"As you may recall, my family are owners of the Zaltin Corporation. The intention behind my joining the squadron was so that I could gain the trust of the New Republic. Zaltin officials had come to the conclusion that the Empire was doomed, and we wanted to come to an agreement with the New Republic to provide Bacta along the lines of the system that existed before the cartel was created by the Empire. Also, since Bacta production is all but impossible without the Vratix, Zaltin began to court them, supplying money and hiding places. The Ashern required me to return to Typhira to join their main planning group. When Irisi asked about my itinerary, I told her, because I wanted her people who owned Zookra watching for my return. On my trip, I transferred from my X-Wing to a freighter that brought me back here. We placed a bomb in my X-Wing meant to mimic the accidental discharge of a proton torpedo.
We intended to enter the system from quite a distance out, send the X-Wing in, then have it blow up where everyone could see it. Corrin scratched at his upper lip. But the imps had an interdictor cruiser waiting for your X-Wing, thanks to Arisi. Jace nodded. At that point, I had gone underground, so it didn't really matter how I died, as much as it mattered that both the New Republic and Zookfra thought I was dead. Elskul folded her arms.
Corrin, we want to fill you in on what we've been talking about since you've been in the tank. Sixtus Aiella and I will be staying here on Typhira, taking Jace's place in the Ashern Planning Councils, because he'll be going back with you to liaise with the squadron.
Wedge grinned as his X-Wing hurtled through hyperspace. Information Broad Jace had brought back set the basis for the run the squadron was now headed out on. Jace had found out that after the rogue raids, Isard had initiated escort service for the Bacta convoys, moving them to centralized locations where client worlds would have to come to get their shipments. The Ashern had sliced new code into the Navicomps on three freighters that would produce a course deviation in the final leg of their trip. The freighters would fly out from under their cover and be in a position for the squadron to make off with them. Wedge knew that the freighters he'd be meeting were from a small convoy that was being watched over by the Victory II-class Star Destroyer Corruptor, led by Captain 8 Convarian. Convarian was supposed to have served both at Dera IV and Hoth before being given the Corruptor and sent off on campaigns of terror against populated worlds on the Outer Rim. He was rumored to be cruel, with a penchant for quick action. Wedge's snub fighter reverted to real space in a system with a red dwarf star surrounded by a dust disk. Three Bacta freighters hung in space just above the plane of the disk. Wedge opened a comm channel.
One and two squadrons, S-foils in attack position.
Backing him up were the X-Wings and the newest ships Wedge had acquired in a recent deal with the Twi'leks. The Cheerdaks, or Death Seeds, were named after a parasitic fungus that invades a larger creature and destroys it. A new Twi'lek pilot, Taldira, had also joined the squadron. Wedge then shifted the comm unit over to the frequency the Typherans used.
This is Wedge Antilles. I have two squadrons of fighters here. We intend to have your cargo. If you cooperate, you will go back home unharmed.
One of the tankers began to move away from the others. Minok, Wedge's R5 droid, tagged it Zookfra Rose.
This is Bors Killen in the Rose. We're yours, Antilles.
Stand by, Rose.
Wedge shifted his comm unit over to the squadron's tactical frequency and ordered Corrin, Urul, and two Twi'lek ships to escort the Rose to Helenit. Wedge looked back at his monitor again. The remaining ships were Zookfra Alazi and Zookfra Meander. Since Alazi was a key component in Bacta, Wedge assumed that captain had seniority over the other ship.
Meander, what is your decision?
Meander began to surrender. And as it did, the Alazi brought its turbo lasers to bear on the defecting ship. Wedge ordered Gavin and Sheil to neutralize Alazi, and they sprinted in. He shifted back to the Typhiran frequency.
Be advised, Alazi, that the same software that allowed us to bring you here will, when the signal is sent, purge your ship of atmosphere and slave itself to our Navicomp data. Your choice is not whether you come with us or not, but whether you do so alive or dead.
He let that sink in, praying they wouldn't call his bluff.
You'll help our families? Isard said she would kill them all if we defected.
You have my word on it.
Silence fell for several heartbeats. Then the Alazi's captain spoke.
Alazi is yours.
As the Alazi came about to starboard and began its run up to light speed, a huge white dagger thrust through the fabric of space on a course that cut in at the freighter's line of flight. Dread bubbled into Wedge's throat as the Corruptor reverted to real space and opened up with its weaponry. A second volley of fire from the Star Destroyer focused on the Bacta tanker.
In an instant, the entire ship glowed orange. Then the storage tanks exploded, one after another. The superheated Bacta sprayed out and instantly congealed into sheets of ice. Nothing remained of the Alazi. There was no word from Riv Shiel or Gavin.
Amid the sound of 1,000 individuals stamping their heels and coming to attention, Fleury Voru followed Isine Isard out of the belly of the shuttle into the corruptor's hold. Voru looked out over the ranks of sailors and stormtroopers and allowed himself a smile. Captain Convarian, whose sharp features, thick black hair, and blue eyes conveyed a surprising intensity, met Fleury Voru's offered hand with a strong grip.
"Pleased to meet you, Captain Convarian," said Voru.
Convarian nodded briskly. "And you, Minister Voru, I am honored that you would deign to notice my ship's exploits." Isard, wearing her Scarlet Admiral's uniform, looked at him with faint amusement in her eyes.
"You have shown initiative, Commander, and I always notice initiative. I should like to inspect your ship, if that is possible, but first I would speak with you in private."
By sending the Corruptor after the errant ships, Convarian had succeeded in ambushing an Antilles operation and scattering his forces. By Convarian's estimate, Antilles had lost a half dozen ships. On the other hand, Antilles had still gotten away with two ships, and Convarian had destroyed a Bacta freighter on his own initiative.
Isard stared at Convarian. "Your discovery of the deception concerning the freighters was impressive, Commander."
"Thank you, but it was no more than should be expected from any of our personnel."
Isard's eyes narrowed. "Analysis of your ship's data records shows your gunners opened fire 3 seconds after reversion. A signal went out to Alazi 5 seconds after reversion, and the volley of shots that destroyed Alazi came 8 seconds after reversion. You chose to shoot regardless of their response."
Convarian's face constricted. Because Alazi was surrounded by hostile snub fighters and was moving in conjunction with them, I had to assume it was under their control. I was aware of your policy of punishing collaborators, and I chose to implement it immediately."
"So, you chose to implement a policy without asking my permission?"
Convarian nodded. "I did."
"And you are prepared to take full responsibility for doing so?"
"I am."
"Then you will execute the families of those crewmen on the Alazi."
Color drained from Convarian's face. "If that is your wish." But Isard was only testing him.
"That situation has been dealt with already and does not need your attention. I have another task for you. Minister Voru, your briefing."
Voru explained that Antilles' crew had given Bacta away to several worlds, damaging profits as well as Isard's reputation.
"You will select one of those worlds and retake our Bacta."
Convarian listened carefully. "And if there is no Bacta to recover?"
Isard straightened up. "If the Bacta is used up, it will have granted them health. You will take it back again."
Convarian nodded. "It will be done."
Voru raised a hand.
"Not so quickly, Captain. There are caveats. First and foremost, you will be taking along with you 2 companies of the Typhoran Home Defense Corps. We want the Typhorans to see the crimes of these worlds as crimes against them, not against Director Isard. We want them to get their hands dirty. If they are acting with us, they become complicit in our activities. By making them administer the punishment to these worlds, we give them an even greater stake in seeing that we remain here to help defend them. And we give them a reason to defend themselves."
Convarian's eyes narrowed.
"You sound as if you truly think Antilles and his rabble can topple you."
"Nonsense!"
Isard waved her hand dismissively.
"There will come a point, however, when the New Republic considers what it is going to do about our control of the Bacta supply. They have refrained from causing trouble so far because they are reluctant to dabble in the internal politics of worlds. Warlord Zinj has further distracted them. But once he has been dealt with, they will again consider us.
Convarian nodded. And if the Typherins back us, the New Republic would have to stage an invasion of Typhara to oust us.
Precisely.
Commander Arisi Glaret's TIE interceptor dropped from the belly of the corruptor and let gravity seduce it down into Halenit's atmosphere. From the moment Isard had appointed her to lead the Typherin Home Defense Corps Aerospace Wing, Arisi had lobbied hard to equip her two THDC squadrons with X-Wings. She had been a Rogue Squadron pilot herself, and she knew that although the X-Wing was slightly less agile than the Interceptor, its shields and use of both proton torpedoes and lasers made it a superior fighter. But Isard had refused, and Arisi knew it was because she needed to see anything and everything Imperial as better than anything the Alliance had to oppose it. Arisi really couldn't blame Isard for treating the Typherins and the THDC as the Empire's stupid cousins. The Corruptor was just en route to Halenit when word came that there had been an Ashern raid on Typhara. Arisi's cheeks burned as she remembered the image of her father, one of the generals in the THDC, slumped in his chair. He had been stunned with a blaster, then his uniform had been stolen, and hollows of him naked had been taken. Her father had been one of Zulfra's most ardent advocates, and by humiliating him, the Ashern had rocked Zulfran society to its foundations. Even worse for Arisi was her discovery that Iella Wissiri had been identified as one of the perpetrators. The imps took that as a sign that Antilles had entered into a full alliance with the Ashern. But Arisi was sure Iella wanted to get back at her for her betrayal of Corran and the rest of the rogues. Below her, the bombers began their runs on Halenit. The high-yield proton bomb shattered Halenit's transparasteel shield. The warm air from beneath the shield rushed upward, blowing debris out. Around the hole's jagged edges, cold air poured down into the colony. Arisi knew that with the canopy breached and the ichthyculture pools transformed into giant stew pots, the Halenit colony was dead. Those who didn't freeze to death would starve. She felt no remorse. Now she had shown Convarian that THDC pilots were not the incompetent nerf brains he thought they were. The feeling in Corran's guts was as cold as Wedge's narration of the holographic imaging from Gavin's X-Wing. He had been rescued by the Halenit after being shot while trying to neutralize the Elazi. They had healed him with the Bacta the squadron had brought them, and he was about to return to Yagdul when the THDC attack came. Gavin had leapt into his X-Wing and done as much damage to the Typherins as he could before returning to base. Corran shivered and felt Mirax gently rub her hand along his spine. He had prepared himself for losing friends in the squadron. He had been able to tell himself that Riv-Shiel had died well in combat, just as he would have wanted to go. The people of Halenit, however, Corran thought, shaking his head. It was assumed that no one in the colony was left living. The glow panels in the small briefing room came up.
"She has to pay."
Gavin hammered his fist on the arm of his chair.
"Isard and Arisi and all of them have to pay."
"And pay they will."
There was determination in Wedge's voice.
"Typhara has dozens of small Bacta-producing colonies. We're going to pick one and destroy it."
When they were dismissed, Mirax and Corran went to one of the tapcafs and sat in a private booth. Mirax sighed. "The rogues are good, but I think you've all underestimated your opposition. Captain Convarian is very aggressive. The captain of the Star Destroyer Avaris, Ser Yonka, is smart. He cares what the odds are and does everything he can to maximize his chances of survival. The Virulence's Joak Drisso is a stalwart Imperial. My father thinks he'll move over to take command of Lusankya.
Drisso's executive officer is Captain Laquivasha, so she'll be moved up in his place. A serving droid put tumblers of Corellian whiskey in front of them, accompanied with steaming noodles and thin-sliced vegetables drenched in a green sauce. Corin speared something crunchy with his fork and popped it into his mouth. The sauce was a bit hot, but it was flavorful, and it cleared his sinuses, so he decided against complaining. He looked up as Ural entered with three other Gans and made his way through the jumble of diners. Ural stopped at the edge of Corin's table.
"Greetings, Corin and Mirax. It is Quirk's honor to present to you three Gans from Quirk's homeworld of Gan."
Mirax smiled.
"We're honored to meet friends of Ural. These Gans are not Quirk's friends. They are Ruth Savi, something like observers or examiners, but more than either."
The taller Gan spoke.
"We have been sent by the elders of Gand to watch Ural Quirk. We are to chronicle Quirk's existence and to criticize it. It is a great honor."
After they left, Mirax raised an eyebrow.
"What was all that about?"
"Not a clue. The Twi'leks have joined us, and now we have some Gans. I just hope Iceheart gets as confused as I am."
2 weeks later, Wedge led an attack against a Bacta refinement plant at the tropical world of Kratu V. The new Gand Ruit Savi accompanied him in heavily modified TIE bombers and helped fight the Typhoran Home Defense Corps pilots. But the THDC pilots were amateurs, and the rogues got away clear. Meanwhile, Booster continued to wheel and deal to get weapons, ships, and supplies at the space station at Yagdul. Mirax Terek gave the rakishly good-looking man a dazzling smile as she stepped into his office, which was located deep in a hollow asteroid.
"Talon Card, pleased to meet you again. I don't know if you'll remember me."
Card's pale blue eyes sparkled.
"I can hardly forget you, Mirax Terek. Because of your efforts, those cases of Alderaanian wine cost me well more than I had expected to pay."
He took her hand and gently kissed it, his black mustache and goatee tickling her fingers. Mirax grinned.
"I didn't realize you were the other person bidding for them."
"But if you had, you'd not have fought any less tenaciously."
Card shrugged.
"If you weren't in the business of hauling things for the rebellion, I might have had a chance to test what I learned against you again." "And my girl would have made you pay even more in your next meeting."
Booster Terek rested his big hands on Mirax's shoulders. Mirax accepted a goblet of pale green Alderaanian wine from Card, then raised her glass with the others as Card offered a toast.
"May the bargaining be as sweet as the profit, and the next deal not long in coming."
As they sipped, he mused,
"This particular year was very good, but the wine laid down the year of Alderaan's demise was supposed to be even better."
Booster cleared his throat.
"It's amazing what you know, Card. Does your encyclopedic knowledge include where I can get some supplies I need?"
Card's eyes narrowed slightly.
"You need, or Wedge Antilles needs?" "They're things that are needed, Card."
Booster brought his hands together.
"Let's trim some parsecs off the course of this conversation, shall we? What I'm looking for is missile and torpedo sensor packages, launch tube assemblies, and a supply of proton torpedoes and concussion missiles."
They negotiated for quite a while, with Mirax taking an active role, and finally they came to an agreement, whereby the materials would be traded for Bacta.
"We'll be transporting the Bacta to our final destination ourselves,"
Booster added. Card leaned back in his chair.
"Not that you don't trust me."
Mirax raised an eyebrow.
"The fact that either one of you would sell the other for a bucket of warm dewback drool isn't really germane here. Betting against Wedge Antilles lost Iceheart the Imperial homeworld and sent her packing for Typhira. Talon, you're too smart not to back Wedge, especially since his victory will break the cartel and open up the Bacta trade. A little gratitude toward you from the Ashurn rebels won't hurt when distribution is set up.
Point taken.
Card picked up the datapad on his desk and punched a few keys.
I'm going to have you liaise with Melina Karnes on the delivery details.
Booster frowned.
Karnes? I don't know her.
She worked for Jabba on Tatooine. Good head on our shoulders. She understands the business, but is a bit shy on experience.
Card waved toward the doorway.
Here she is. Come in, Melina.
Melina's short, dark hair accentuated a scar that began near the corner of her right eye and shot back beyond her ear. She was pretty, with dark eyes and a full mouth. Card explained.
Melina, you'll coordinate shipments of material to Booster. The cargo and delivery points will be hazardous, but we'll not charge him our normal rates. Now, let us attend to the details that make sure we all profit.
Coming back from a raid, Corin felt so tired that he knew he should just turn in. But the idea of hitting the small suite of rooms he shared with Murax didn't appeal. On his approach back to the Yagdul station, he'd gotten a message she'd recorded saying she was taking her father out on another trip to finalize arrangements with Card. She expected to be gone for 3 days. The 4th anniversary of Corin's father's death had snuck up and ambushed him. A lot of hydrogen had been melted into helium in a lot of stars since then, but the memory of holding his father's dead body in his arms had the immediacy of an event that had occurred moments before. The man's stillness, the stink of blood and blaster-burned flesh, the screams of those in the cantina, including his own, all pounded in on him. The previous year, things had not seemed so bad. But he'd just started with Rogue Squadron at that time, so he had a legion of distractions to dull the pain. He also realized that his liaison with Murax, and then meeting her father, made it tougher on him. Though he loved her and wouldn't give her up for anything, Corin couldn't help feeling that his father would have felt betrayed by his love for Murax. On top of that, the next step in the evolution of the Bacta War was pushing him to the limit. Wedge had teams, from full squadrons down to single two-ship flights, out harassing the Bacta cartel. The whole strategy was to hit and run, which worked exceedingly well. Because the Typhoran scheduled their Bacta shipments in advance, it was possible for the Rogues to show up, force the Star Destroyers to scramble their fighters, pop off some proton torpedoes to take out a few TIEs, then scatter. He knew the strategy had to be frustrating for Iceheart's people, since they were taking losses without killing any of the Rogues. But it wasn't much better for Corin or the rest of Wedge's people. Realizing he had no desire to be alone, he headed for the tapcalf known as Flare Star. Fleury Voru nodded as graciously as he could manage to Isart.
I have information you will find useful. As you know, our main problem in dealing with Antilles is that the Rogues are striking at us and running quickly. We arrive, they launch proton torpedoes or concussion missiles, then they scatter like shrapnel. I have yet to find out the location of Antilles' base. Until I do, I have uncovered 2 important pieces of information. Where they are getting their munitions, and more to the point, where the next shipment will be handed over to the Antilles group.
Really?
It is true, Madam Director. A woman in Talon Card's employ is working with us. Melina Karnes informs me that Booster Terek placed a huge order for munitions and equipment, which Card is meeting in installments. Card's people are shipping the supplies to a rendezvous point. Then Terek is taking them back to Antilles headquarters. They will be making the transfer in the Alderaan system. If we divert our warships to Alderaan, we can ambush the Antilles group and destroy them.
Isard's eyes narrowed.
I'm not going to send all my ships. This information may be false. However, I will send Convarian and the Corruptor. He's ambushed them once and can do it again.
Voru shook his head. But if you only send the Corruptor, and Tilly's and his people will scatter as usual.
No, Voru, we will accomplish everything. While you have woven a net of spies to catch Antilles, I have been searching for the means to kill him. I have found it, and in 12 hours it will be here, and ready to join Convarian as he goes for the kill.
Voru frowned. I don't understand.
It is simple, Minister Voru. At great expense, I have leased from High Admiral Teradoc a ship, the Aggregator.
Voru's jaw dropped. An interdictor cruiser.
Exactly.
She clapped her hands together.
When it arrives at Alderaan and powers up its gravity well projectors, Antilles and his ships will be trapped.